This is a Glassbox Media podcast.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
And welcome to the Blank Podcast, the podcast where we delve into those difficult moments with some well-known guests. I'm Giles Paley Phillips, and with me in Chesham, of all places, is James Doerdaly.
Oh, gone very formal there. James Doerdaly, that makes me sound a little bit sort of like a sort of guardian writer of some sort.
Yeah, it does actually, yeah.
Which I'll take, that's probably a great job. Hi, how you doing?
I'm all right, how are you?
I'm okay. Yeah, not too bad.
It's a Monday. We don't normally record on a Monday.
So that's different. It is different.
It won't be different for our listeners. They won't give a fuck. But
unless they listen on a Monday, maybe they'll listen on a Monday as well.
Oh yeah, that would be spooky. If you're listening on a Monday, we recorded this on a Monday, so that's a mad coincidence.
Quite meta. Well, we were both saying off air, weren't we, that we're sort of having busy days today. It's been a bit of an action-packed day. And I've got a bit of an action-packed week, and I know you've been very busy as well. So it feels a little bit like we're sort of, you know, lockdown's not over, but we're sort of getting back into the swing of sort of normality in terms of work and stuff.
I've had quite a busy lockdown. I mean, lots of different projects on the go, books and lots of podcasting. Everyone's podcasting now. The whole world has woken up to podcasting, and which is, you know, it's great. It's great, and it's been nice. I think it's something we talk about on this week's pod about with our guest Lorraine Kelly about that. About having distractions during this time, and she's been working all the way through, and it's been a great distraction for her.
Yes, and I mean she's been working a lot, and I think what was nice was that she was talking about how much she embraces new technology and how the technology allows us now to do all this. It's allowed us to continue doing this podcast and many other podcasts to keep going, and I think it's she was saying, I thought it's made people more creative in a way, certainly in the TV industry, and I think probably in a lot of broadcasting industries. And that's been good, actually. I think that creativity was always there in people, but it's taken sort of lockdown to bring it out. I think I hope going forward it's going to keep people being creative and almost keep anything a possibility, regardless of, you know, whether we're allowed to leave our houses or not.
Well, I think creative people are... just can't help but be creative, so they will find ways to be creative, whatever they're doing. I mean, I've seen this last weekend, stand-up gigs, where it's like a drive-in stand-up gig. I mean, that's incredible, you know, getting some great comedians there, and some of our old guests, actually, Mark Watson being one of them, Jess Foster Q, and so people doing these gigs, and that's great. And then, like you say, on TV, podcasting, writing, whatever it is, creatives are really... giving lots of people, I mean, obviously we've said before, it's a distraction for us making these things, but it's also a distraction for people consuming them.
Yeah, and I think it's made people appreciative. Make people appreciate creative people and doing their things. So yeah, I think it's, we talked about this with Lorraine quite a lot, didn't we? That she's fairly positive about coming out the other side of this. I mean, she's a quite a positive person, and it was really nice to. I always thought she would be, and it was really nice to actually then see off air she is, and that was lovely. But she's positive about the future, and I think we have to be in a bit. I think you're right. There's been so many examples of people cracking on and doing things and getting creative that. Yeah, I'm positive about where we go from all this.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I think, and yeah, I mean, Lorraine is just fantastic. She's exactly how I imagined she would be. I mean, I think you used the word gregarious, didn't you? And that's, which is a lovely word.
I'm not massively sure I know what that means, but it's one of those long words that sounds good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, we'll use it again. It probably doesn't mean the thing we're trying to say that it means. But anyway, in this instance, yeah, she's a super positive person. She's got a really bubbly personality and wonderful company, just wonderful company. And she's had an incredible career. I mean, she's been working at ITV for over 36 years. She has seen everything, been there, done it, and then been a stalwart of breakfast TV and, you know, a consummate professional, even though she did tell us some of her trade secrets.
Well, why else would we have people on the podcast? That's why we do this. We want the gossip. She was brilliant. I think we should just crack on with the episode and let people regale in the wonderful company of the gregarious Lorraine Kelly on the Blank Podcast.
We might as well dive in. How have you found work? Because you've been working all the way through this.
I have not missed a day. And to be honest with you, it's kept me sane. It actually has kept me sane. I don't know. I'm someone who needs structure in their life anyway. And being able to go to work has really, you know, it's given me something to get up on. It's given me something to focus on. And this is a, you know, it's been... I suppose it's a fight, because obviously what we've been trying to do is we've been trying to give people information as what's going on, but we've always tried to somehow find a little bit of light in a very dark place, because there is, you know, we've seen incredible heroism and we've seen people doing amazing things and people being, you know, the best of humanity. Yeah. There's been obviously terrible things have happened as well, but yeah, I'm just glad I've had the chance to go to work. Actually, I'm going to take a couple of weeks off because my dad's not well, and I've got to go, and I can finally go up and see him. So that's huge that I can actually go in and see him now, because he's in shielding. So that's really good. I'm glad that I've been able to go to work. It's helped me. It's kept me from going crazy.
Have you learned anything about yourself or about work or anything like that during the lockdown?
You know what? I've learned that actually it's okay to feel overwhelmed. You know, I've actually found sometimes and anxiety as well. You know, I'm very much that sort of, oh, you just get on with it. You know, that when I was a kid, that's what my mum and dad sort of instilled, that terribly Calvinistic work ethic. You know, it's very sort of Scottish thing, and you just get on with it. You know, you go to school, and what are you talking about? You've got a cold, you've broken your leg, drag yourself to school. You just do it. So, but what it's actually been quite good is for me to realize that actually I do get overwhelmed and I do get anxious, because who wouldn't in these times? And it's all right to feel like that. It's that thing of, you know, you sort of soak it all up. I've actually found myself, I have been talking to friends a lot more. In fact, my best friend, who we've got that sort of friendship, we've known each other since we were 12. If we don't see each other for ages, it doesn't really matter. Mm. We just pick up the conversation. But we've been making a point of every single week we've been doing a Zoom call. And it's been amazing. And I've actually unburdened a lot on her. And likewise, you know, we've been just talking about how we've been feeling. Because I think it's just so important for all of us to do that. You can't bottle it up. You just can't.
It's important having those kind of friends, though, those older friends, you know, like...
That know you really
well. Yeah, yeah, well, yeah, and who take you for who you are. They're not sort of mixed up in, you know, your kind of current lifestyle. They're just those people that know you, and you can... It's nice to be able to turn to those people, isn't it? And especially in these sort of times.
Oh, definitely. I mean, obviously my husband, of course, yeah. I talk to him, and my daughter's here with us just now. She starts our work in September. She's been living in Singapore for the past few years, but she managed to get back here. And she did self-isolate, and she couldn't believe when she got to Heathrow, this is a way back before June even, and she couldn't believe when she got to Heathrow there was no checks, not even a temperature check, nothing. She just couldn't, you know, coming from Singapore when they're really on it, and she just couldn't believe that. But what's been great about being with her is when your kids get older, and she's 26 now, they'll come and see you, and they might come for Sunday lunch, or they come and see you for dinner, or you go and meet them or something, and you do things. What's been great is not doing anything with her. You know, we sat and we watched Game of Thrones, which was fantastic. So much because she loved it. We're watching Below Deck at the moment, which is a nutty reality show that's just bonkers. Giles, it's crazy. It is absolutely crazy. It's just completely addictive. It's exactly what you need at the moment. It just takes you out of yourself and you just watch these people. It's about folks that work on these big luxury yachts and what's going on below it. Oh, yeah. And the people that rent, the people that charter these boats are horrific, by and large. The most ghastly, awfulest people you've ever seen in your life. So it's just wonderful. There's all those dynamics going on. So we've basically been vegging out. We've been sitting doing nothing, just chatting, doing nothing at all, and just spending time and hanging out together. And it's been a joy. It's just been great.
Yeah, that is special. I mean, we've had the same with our two boys, 13 and 11, so a bit younger, but just being with each other. And doing
not kind of do your homework, what are we having for tea? You just, and I'm not saying you have big deep conversations because you know you don't. Now and again you do, but just hanging about, just being lovely.
Yeah,
having
getting to know them, like getting to know them a bit more.
Yeah, you know you're so right because sometimes we don't really know our kids. I mean, I always think it's weird when parents say that they are friends with their children because you're not. You're the mum or your dad. You're not your friend. They tell their friends things they're not going to tell you. Of course they do, and that's absolutely right. But yeah, sometimes we don't know our kids, you know, when they go away. Like, she went away to university, and of course I see her, you know, when the laundry came back, but you don't really, you're not that involved with their lives, and it's been wonderful. It's that thing of trying to find some sort of positivity in this craziness, and that's certainly for me being one of them. Being able to go to my work as well has been great, and just meeting and talking to extraordinary people who've done incredible things. You know, there was me, Margaret. She's 90 years old, toddling up and down her stairs up in the north of Scotland, the equivalent of climbing a mountain. I mean, that's just brilliant. And raised a fortune for the local hospice. You know, all these wee kids that are drawing rainbows, just incredible, you know, just really, it's really, and it does sort of, you know, in a dark time, it does sort of help you a lot, I think, to see that there's a lot of good out there. We tend to focus inevitably on the bad story and the terrible tragedies and all of that. And we have to. But sometimes you don't know as much on the good that's been done.
Yeah, I think in sort of moments of adversity, people's character comes to the fore sometimes. And actually, look at people like Captain Tom, you know, raising all that money. There are some fabulous people in Britain doing some great things.
Yeah, doing incredible things. And it doesn't necessarily, I mean, what he did was absolutely brilliant. He just kind of summed up the spirit of how we would all like to be, what we would aspire to be, and that incredible generation who are just, you know, and they've got such great stories to tell as well. And that sort of like makes me sad because you think of what happened in the care homes. It's like we threw that generation under the bus. Yes. And it's really terrible. I mean, it's absolutely shocking. And looking back, of course, we can see that a lot of mistakes have been made. And I know nobody wakes up in the morning and thinks, how can we screw this up? But geez, you know, when you think of some of the decisions that were made, I sincerely hope that we've learned a lot of lessons. I mean, I don't ever want to go through this again, but, you know, we might have to. There might be a second wave. There might be something else around the corner. And I really hope the powers that be are a hell of a lot better prepared for it than they were. That generation that deserve our respect and our admiration, it's what happened in care homes is shocking. And again, that was people that we talked to, people that worked in care homes. Wow, like, amazing. Some of them didn't go back to their families. You know, they stayed with their other families, as they call them, stayed there and looked after them. Again, these people are extraordinary.
Do you think there's been do you think there'll be a shift in attitude towards frontline workers and key workers, and people will actually appreciate what these people do for us that are not really paid enough and not really appreciated.
Absolutely. I mean, I do think there's been a shift and an almost like a reset. And you sort of, you know, things like the Kardashians, I've always felt that they were irrelevant anyway, but I think that people are now maybe beginning to think, actually, just having a big bum, surely there's got to be things that are more relevant than that, and that are more, no, but seriously, yeah. No, really, and you sort of, you know, things like that are, really do make you think, come on, let's behave. I mean, that's not to say that that doesn't mean to say that you totally don't have to watch silly reality shows like I was talking about, or daft things, or enjoy life, or all of these things, but it really does bring it home to you just who's important. And you're absolutely right, they should be getting a pay rise. They're taken for granted, and that's the thing now. I hope that we won't ever take the frontline workers, not obviously the NHS are amazing, but all the frontline workers, social workers, who never, ever, nobody ever says thanks. When is the last time a social worker got a thank you? The only time you ever hear about social work is when something sadly has gone wrong. The people have tried their best, but somehow something has gone wrong. But they never, teachers, yep. You know, teachers now, every single parent that's had to homeschool their kids is like, oh, teachers are the best. Yeah. They're amazing. Not all heroes wear capes. And it's true, you know, people that pick up your bins, Jesus, if we didn't have them, what would we do? You know, it's just security guys, everything, the whole spectrum of all these folk that work so hard, and we've taken them for granted, and we can't do that anymore.
Now, Lorraine, you grew up in Glasgow, right?
I did, yes.
What was childhood like?
It was great because, you know, I was very lucky. My mum and dad were terribly young when they had me.
Were they?
They were only 17, just about 18.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And they did not have anything. I mean, they really grafted. They're both real grafters. My dad just worked all the hours, God sends. But they took us, when they got married, they went back to, I suppose what people would call it now, a studio flat. It was a one-bedroom with an outside toilet and a wee recess where the bed was and no hot water. So it was pretty basic. It was pretty basic. So that's what I went back to when I was a little kid. But, you know, our house was, we were lucky. We were considered quite posh because we moved from the Gorbals to Brighton. And that was a house that had an inside toilet.
Oh, wow.
That
is posh. Oh, wow. Yes. Yeah.
Really posh. But we were, I mean, my mum, my dad, I was always turned out really well. You know, that I had, you know, they spent all their money and my brother and I, you know, making sure that we had decent clothes and decent food, taught us both to read and write before we went to primary school, which was a massive thing. Now, it weren't pushy though, any sort of typical Scottish working class and not pushy, you know, that sort of working class cringe that you sometimes get, which is a shame. But yeah, it was a really, really happy childhood. I was really, really happy until I was about six, and then my brother came along, and he was like a child from Central Casting. Big, giant blue eyes, gorgeous wee chubby cheeks that everybody just wanted to go woo, 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 like that and pinch him, and blonde hair like a cherub. And I hated him. and I wasn't very nice. And we got on so well. In fact, he's just texted me a minute ago. He lives in Singapore as well. And we got on so well now. But he still teases me about, you know, he says the psychological scars that he has from, you know, the fact that he's nip his wee fat legs.
My brother was the same. Blonde hair, blue eyes. I think mum and dad sent him to an audition for the Milky Bar Kid, I think, at one point or something. I think so. Or entered him into the... I think there was like an open casting or something. Yeah, thankfully he didn't get it because he would have been unbearable. Oh,
unbearable, yeah.
No, but then, we moved there. And then we moved to East Kilbride, which is a little bit like Milton Keynes. You know, it's a new town.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So I moved there when I was a teenager, and then I got a job at the East Kilbride News. I was supposed to go to uni, and I would have been the first in the family to have gone to university. That was a big deal, you know, to get that photograph, mantelpiece with a funny hat and the scroll and the robe and everything. But my brother went, of course, and was a prodigy, so that was great. But yeah, I just went to my local newspaper, and that's how I started out. About 17 then, and I loved it. Brilliant training, you know, because you do everything in local newspapers, absolutely everything, and it was a great time. So I was a happy kid. Mm. I really was. I was very, very lucky. It was a good childhood. I suppose people now, you know, when I look back at some of the photographs, especially when the tenement was condemned and it was getting really run down, and I look at some of the photographs, I suppose people would say, you know, my goodness me, you lived in this terrible, you know, dreadful area. No, really, we really were happy, you know, we really were. And like I say, very, mum and dad very well looked after. You know, mum would make brilliant meals, homemade soup and homemade mince and potatoes and everything like that. We were really well looked after. So I probably see it through rose-coloured glasses, as many people do. But it was a really, it was good childhood, good family, and lots of pals, which was great.
Were your parents ever disappointed? Was there any sort of feeling of disappointment that you didn't go to university?
Oh, gosh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. But they never said it at the time.
No.
They wouldn't say it to me at the time. It was only afterwards when things were okay, and I went from working in East Grey News to BBC Scotland for a while, and then only for a year, and then I joined TVAM as their Scottish correspondent. When I went to work for BBC Scotland as a researcher, I got called into the boss's office, and I thought he was going to give me a job as a reporter because that's what I really wanted to do. But he told me that my accent was terrible. My accent was offensive, my Glasgow accent. And that was BBC Scotland. But that was back then when things were different and nobody spoke like me or Eamon or lovely Anton Deck. You know, nobody spoke like that. Everybody spoke a sort of affected posh way. Yeah, you know, it was a very specific way of people speaking. But that's all changed now, and I think for the better. I definitely do. So when I got told that, I just applied for a job at TVAM, and luckily the boss was an Australian and didn't really care how people spoke.
It's handy.
It's like, what?
It's interesting that we've talked to quite a few broadcasters and stuff, and that time in local news is so important to them. And a real grounding. I mean, Jim was also, you worked in local news, the Uckfield Courier, wasn't it?
Yes, I closed the Uckfield Courier due to my lacklustre reporting and low publishing numbers. But it's a good grounding, I think. You learn a lot.
You do. You learn so, so much. I mean, I am so old that when I worked at the East Kilbride News, it was still hot metal. So we literally had the typewriter with the little pieces of paper and typed with two fingers. Like that. But I'm glad I saw that. It was towards the end of all of that, and I'm really glad that I actually saw that part of the newspaper industry, because it was a huge, huge big part, and a huge, just to put everything into context, now it's so easy. You know, you can write columns, write things anywhere. You can do, look at us, we're sitting having a chat. It's incredible what we can do, and we've been able to do, I don't think we would have been able to do our show even 5 years ago. But I've been able to do my show every day because we can do things on WhatsApp, on Zoom, on, you know, we can talk to anybody. I mean, we've done items with people in Antarctica, people in the International Space Station. We've had things, you know, all over the place, in the middle of absolutely nowhere, and clear as a bell, clear as a bell.
You went from the local newspaper to quite quickly into doing like live reporting,
I was at East Grey News for about 4 or 5 years, and then I went to BBC. I went to the BBC because I just wanted to see what telly was like. And I basically applied for every job at the BBC at the time. I even applied for farming correspondent in Aberdeen, and I know nothing. And then I got a job as a researcher, like I was saying, and I loved that. Again, learned so, so, so much. Learned so much. In fact, one of the crew, again, it was like at the sort of tail end of things, one of the crew still had film.
Oh, okay.
You would actually have to... you would actually have to put the film in the bath for it to develop.
Oh, wow. It's a proper celluloid.
I literally get a razor blade. It was just great to see that as well. And then to see all the new technology coming in was so exciting. You know, I absolutely, and still do, embrace all of that, you know. And I know social media gets a really bad name, and quite rightly sometimes it can be a horrible, nasty wee place when you lift the stone up and all these horrible, terrible things that come out. But what an amazing thing it is. What an amazing thing that I can still, even though, you know, I'm so worried about my dad because he's not well, so I can see him. You know, I can see his face. It's just brilliant. I mean, that is incredible. And like I say, able to do the show. And in some ways, it's been quite interesting doing the show with people in their houses. They're much more relaxed. Yeah. And also you can see their houses.
Yeah, that's always nice.
You know, it's good. You know, it's good. It's given us an opportunity to talk to people that we might not have been able to. Mm. Like, we talked to Piers Brosnan in his house in Hawaii. I mean, how mad is that? You know, but it was great. And you probably, you know, usually something like that, there'd be a big falderal. They would come to the UK. They would, you know, we would be filed in to talk to them in little 10-minute chunks in a posh hotel room. Whereas we just, and there he is in his kitchen. He was having his breakfast. We were having our tea, and it was all kind of, it was just great. And again, he's always very relaxed, but he was so kind of like, I'm just about to toddle off to the beach, do a bit of surfing. And like, oh,
what a life! Yeah. What a life! I do think actually we are more connected now, I think, than when before lockdown. Yeah. My sister said an interesting thing. So she works in business. She's a bit like Chandler from Friends. I don't really know what she does, but I know it's like businessy of some sort. But she was saying that they're having meetings on Zoom and stuff, and she's seeing into her colleagues' houses. She's meeting her colleagues' children, their pets. And actually, she feels way more connected now to these people than she would. She'd have never met their children. She'd have never seen in their houses. And I think it is bringing us way closer together.
I think you're absolutely right, because at work, you see one aspect of someone, don't you? You just see that aspect in their work mode, and you don't really know what they are actually like when they're with their pals or they're relaxed. And you're right, it's a whole new world. And again, you know, trying to find some sort of positive aspects to this, that's certainly been one of them, I think. And I hope we hold on to that and that sort of sense of community as well. I mean, we've got a wee WhatsApp group in our lane here, because quite a few people that live here are slightly older. So, you know, way back at the very, very start in particular, you know, if one of us was going to the supermarket, we'd just say, does anybody need anything? Or if somebody was going, when the fish and chip shop opened up again, yay! You know, if you were going for fish and chips for yourself, we'll go and get them for everyone else. If you're going to go, you know, that kind of thing. Just little things, but, you know, that actually sort of mean quite a lot and mean that you are, again, that we are connected, even though we were all sitting in our houses for quite some time. It's been so strange, hasn't it? I've never known anything like it. And I just hope we're not coming out of it too fast. I just think we have to... I know Scotland's been a different. We're a little bit behind, and that's why I've not been able to go home, but we'll be able to go home soon. I just think baby steps. I mean, of course we've got to get back to whatever normal is, the new normal, but I just think baby steps.
Let's take it,
you know, don't want to go too far, then we've got to go back. I can't, I mean, can you imagine how soul destroying it would be if we have to go right back into lockdown, you know, right back to where we were? That would be very hard, I think, on everybody, you know, mentally, physically and mentally, and also very hard on the NHS, because they must be absolutely knackered.
Yeah.
And for them to have to go back to that, you know. And I don't know about you guys, but you know when you wear a mask to go out shopping, and I had the mask on to go out shopping, it was for like, what, an hour? It was awful. Can you imagine what they must be like in all that gear for like 12 hours? I don't know how they do it. I really don't know how they do it. My admiration was always huge, but it's surpassed that now. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. No, it's been an eye-opening time, I think, for lots of reasons, isn't it? But it's interesting that thing, you know, like the way we are coming together a little bit more in certain ways, and how we must have lost that along the way somewhere, because it feels like, you know, post-war we had that moment where we came together, and then over the years, over the decades, we've lost it, and it's a shame.
I think it's sort of inevitable somehow as well. A lot of families are. Excuse me, a lot of families are fractured. You know, you know, you look at us, and there's my mum, my dad, they have two kids, they're still in Scotland, I'm in London, Graham's in Singapore, and we were just looking at all of our family, actually, funnily enough, the other day, and we're saying, some are in Australia, some America, some Canada, you know, everybody's all over the place. One of our cousins was in China up until quite recently, and that's great, crikey, people should go out and see the world, it's the most important thing. But it does mean that families do tend to get a bit fractured, and we do have this thing of, especially in London, I have to say, I mean, when I first came to London, I was used to like being in Glasgow, where if you were standing waiting for the bus, you would strike up a conversation, you would have a meeting about everything, and you know, and we are quite nosy people, you know, we want to know what's going on. And here, if I'd be on the tube or I'd be on the bus, you know, it's a wee back when I first come down, way back in the 80s, and I'd strike up conversations, you could actually see people moving away. They were scared. They were like, why is this woman talking to me? And that changed a little bit. That always changed, sadly, after, you know, something like a terrible attack has happened. People in London are, and they're really resilient, and they just go on with it, and there was that real camaraderie, but it sort of drifts away again, and I'm just wondering this time, I'm hoping that it will last. I really do. I hope it will last, that we will talk to each other a little bit more and be a little bit more considerate about one another. I really hope so. I think it will. I think it has to. I think we have to have a different mindset now, don't we, as we go into the new normal.
Yeah, whatever the new normal ends up being.
Whatever.
But have you, I mean...
I don't know.
Going back to those early jobs, the newspaper and research at BBC, I just get the I've always got the impression with you that you're a real people person, that you know, and you're talking about striking up a conversation on the bus. Has that always been the sort of person you were like, sort of right back to then, just...
Although I'm quite, believe it or not, actually quite shy. Like, I mean, if we, I'm not very good in social situations. I mean, I find, see all these things like going to premieres and going to big do. It's not for me. I'm not comfortable. I don't really like it. I don't like walking into a room where I don't know anybody. Or, and the red carpet thing, oh, yoy, that is my idea of hell on earth. I mean, I really don't like it and I really don't do it very often. It would only be, like, maybe if I was going to something where I was giving out an award or something like that, or that you, or it was a three-line whip and you sort of had to be there. But really, I don't really enjoy the whole... It's daft! It's daft when you think about it. You got all done up like a dish of fish to toddle up and down the red carpet for people to take your photo and then for something in a magazine to say that you look terrible. What's the point? I mean, it is really crazy. So, but I think a lot of things like that will probably... pretty much disappear. I mean, it got to the stage, it was ridiculous. I mean, I remember last year, we've got a lovely fella, our Ross King, who does all our stuff in Hollywood. And there was, I said to him, do you realise, Ross, that for the past five Mondays, all we've done is talk about award ceremonies. Does anybody do any blinking work in Hollywood? All they do is just go and give each other gongs and tell each other how brilliant you are and how fantastic you are. And it's amazing. Surely that's got to kind of get... that sort of thing can't really go on anymore. It just feels terribly, it just feels a bit kind of, I don't know, a bit nothingy, a bit sort of irrelevant.
It's trivial, isn't it?
And if you, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think getting an Oscars and must be an amazing thing, but absolutely incredible. So you could keep the Oscars and keep the BAFTAs.
Get rid of everything
else. Do we really need all the Oscars? Do we? I don't think we do. I just don't. Maybe we do the Oscars and the BAFTAs for the health service. Maybe we do that. Although we do that, actually. We do an award thing later on in the year. And that's going to be very emotional and quite right too. And so we can have as many of those as we like. But maybe we just sort of, in the world of showbiz and entertainment, maybe they just kind of calm it down a wee bit.
Well, I mean, this goes back to like also things like the honours list, where, you know, obviously, like the big headlines are the what celebrity has got a sir on MBE or whatever it is, a knighthood. And we very, very rarely focus our attention on the, you know, the people that just do, like, you know, a friend of mine, her dad got an MBE because he set up a birthing unit in Crowborough, you know.
Oh, wow.
Really incredible work. He'd spent years of his life doing this thing, but there was like hardly any, like, kind of, you know, and I think.
But don't you think that'll change?
Well, I hope so. I really hope so.
I don't know when the honours is actually out. I'm not sure how things like that will work now, or whether it'll be sort of remote, or whether it'll be, I genuinely don't know. But I think that'll be different this year. I think it'll be honouring people. I mean, obviously, Captain Tom is, or Colonel Tom, I should say. He's there, but he has to get that. I need him to get that moment with the Queen, don't you?
Yeah.
I think that will be the edge that you want. But at the same time, obviously, both of them are not exactly... teenagers, so we have to make sure that we're fine. Can you imagine that they're all neat? But that would be that's the kind of person you want to get on. You want that. You want the nurse that's put in God knows how many shifts and who's worked so hard. That's who should be honoured, of course, absolutely. And it will be, I'm sure.
I'm convinced that Marcus Rashford is Sports Personality of the Year. If he doesn't get some sort of
That boy, that was, wasn't that extraordinary? Talk about using your star power, and also because footballers were really getting a kicking, weren't they? From everything, they were an easy target, you know, and you know what it's like when governments, they want to eat off themselves, so they someone else. But that was astonishing because he didn't have to do that. You know, he really didn't. And for somebody to take something that meant so much to him, you know, the fact that he benefited so much from the females, and then to make sure that it continues. It was just, and in the great scheme of things, the amount of money concerned, of course a huge amount of money, but in the huge scheme of things where billions have been spent on projects and on software and on all sorts of things that have not worked, he should be made a sir. He should be definitely, I'm sure he will be. I know he didn't do it for that, but what a great guy. I mean, how proud you would be if that was your boy.
Yeah,
that was amazing. An amazing thing. Amazing, absolutely incredible. God love him.
I mean, you're obviously passionate about a lot of issues, like social issues and stuff. Is it sometimes hard to convey that on the sort of shows that you do?
No, I know what you mean. But actually, in some ways, it's almost easier. And it's really interesting because I find, especially with politicians who come on the show, because they kind of, if they haven't watched, then, you know, it's difficult because they kind of think, oh, they're going to get a really easy ride. Oh, it's just, it's a little, oh, it's a lovely little fluffy la 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 la, little bunny rabbits toddling around and woodland creatures doing my washing up. No, so it's not really like that. But I'm not gladiatorial and I'm not confrontational. That's not my style. And to be honest, sometimes that absolutely works. Of course, we see it. But other times, sometimes I just think, especially with politicians, especially if they're not all that bright, is you give them enough,
it's quite
let
a lot
them
of them,
talk.
I think.
You know, you give them enough time to talk and they damn themselves, inevitably. And it's that thing. I mean, Piers Morgan always says, what did he say I was? He said, an iron fist in a velvet glove. Mm. And I love that description. I think that's a really good description. And yeah, you know, these people need to be, I think it's terrible that no ministers are coming on GMB.
Yeah,
you know, they came on, they come on with me. I mean, I haven't had many. I had Priti Patel on recently. But that's probably been that. And that's a shame because, you know, it's not about, I know Piers says, oh, they're not coming on to talk to me or Susanna. You know, when I say Piers is saying he's not coming on to talk to him or Susanna, it's not really about that. It's not whether or not they're going to come on and talk to the hosts, because actually we're not really important. We're just a conduit. It's that they're not coming on and talk to our viewers. And that makes me so, that they're not coming on and talk to real people who need answers and who need clarity. The person through all of this who has been clear and has given us information and sometimes a difficult pill to swallow has been our Dr. Hillary. Mm. He has been fantastic. And especially even today, you know, we were talking about masks and, you know, there you've got the Prime Minister saying, well, you know what, maybe it's a good idea. Then you've got Michael Gove saying, well, you know what, it's good manners to wear a mask and maybe, but, you know, let's rely on people's common sense. No, let's not do that.
Yeah.
Let's just tell people, wear a blinking mask. Just do it, you know, just wear a mask and that's that. Not this kind of, you know, do you think the virus is going to go, oh, they're very well-mannered, I'll just go away then. They've got good manners, so I won't bother them. I mean, for goodness sake, it's like they don't realise what we're dealing with. It's crazy. And I know everybody's trying their best. I'm not saying that they're not, but sometimes you just despair. You really do. Yeah. It's all about, I mean, you look at New Zealand and you just think, can we not clone that woman?
She's amazing,
extraordinary.
Yeah.
Incredible. Did you see her? Did you see when there was an earthquake?
Yeah, incredible.
She just went, oh, there's a wee earthquake there, and just kept going. Most of our guys would run away and hidden behind a small child. You know, she's just like, she's getting on with it. Oh, incredible. Incredible. Absolutely amazing.
Well, I don't think it's any coincidence that the countries in the world where the pandemic has been best handled has been ones where women are in charge.
Yeah, I know you do. You look at Taiwan, you look at New Zealand,
Germany.
You know, you look at Nordic countries. Iceland, Germany, of course. I mean, you know, it's been tough in Germany, but they've at least she tells it like it is. Same in Scotland, fair, and if you take politics out of it, and to be fair to Nicola Sturgeon, she said this is not about politics. She just wants to do the best job she can. And I watch her at midday every day. She's still doing her briefings, and she never dodges a question. Right. You know, and she gets really hard questions from the journalists up there, really tough ones. Never dodges it. Never says. And if she doesn't know, she says, I don't know. But I'll find out. And that's how you have to be as a politician. You know, never, again, forget what party you're in. You have to be that straight and you have to tell people, even if it's unpalatable truths, you've got to. And you've got, I mean, she's made decisions that aren't popular. She's, you know, she made the decision not to allow flights from Spain to come to Scotland without quarantine. I mean, that's not going down well, as you can imagine. It'll change, though. It'll change as things go on. But yeah, sometimes as a politician, that's what's so interesting about Boris Johnson, because I think he's a man that likes to be liked.
Yeah.
And that's why he's finding it so difficult in this pandemic, because he's got to give us uncomfortable truths. And I think he finds that very hard. From what I know of him, I don't know him, but from what I've seen and what I've read and what other people have said, he is somebody who likes to be popular and likes people to say, oh, well done, mate. And nobody's going to do that right now. So You just have to be the guy that tells the truth, whether or not it's going to make people happy. Not
Lorraine,
pretend it isn't.
If you ran for office, I'd vote for you.
No, you're kidding. Can you imagine? Oh gosh, I mean, it's the toughest job in the world. Mind you, I mean, anything's possible these days. When you look at Trump, and then you look poor wee Kanye West, who I think it's just a poor wee soul. But there, I mean, can you know, when people say Kanye West might be President of the United States and Kim Kardashian might be First Lady, you can't laugh at that, because that actually could happen. it could, because look what they've got already. So it could actually happen. You know, you cannot rule anything out. You cannot rule anything out anymore. It's just, you couldn't make it up.
No. No, you couldn't. Oh. I mean, going back to Nicola Sturgeon and Scotland, do you miss Scotland? Do you miss being up there?
I do miss it. I mean, I'm lucky in that I can go up as so I tell you what I've really missed this year is every year in May, it's the highlight of my year. I go up to Orkney.
Oh, nice.
And it is like a battery charged. It's one of the most beautiful places on God's earth. And it doesn't matter if you wake up and it's raining, because in 2 minutes it'll be sunny, and then it'll be snow, and then it'll be sleet, and then it'll be rain, and then it'll be sunny again. And I've had such wonderful times up there. The people are just a delight. And you know, you get to know people as you go back and back. So I miss that. I really, really miss that. And I just miss, it's more people, you know. I miss my mum and dad and my friends. You know, normally we'd be up there seeing them. I'd be up there going to the football. You know, I try to get up there at least once or twice a month to go see a game. I'm missing that too. That sort of, you know, the tribalism in the good way. Tribalism in a good way, not in a negative way. And the camaraderie of that is good for you, you know. Mm. So I do miss that. And before all of this, I got up all the time, and I used to commute. I did a commute for a long time. That was when there's a little flight that goes from Dundee to London City Airport, and that's really easy. That's like the bus. It was fantastic. But yeah, but I've got loads and loads of pals down here as well, so we're lucky. And with Rosie being home as well, that's been great. But I do. I mean, my heart does lift, obviously, you will do the big cheer going across the border. But I love living down here. It's been very, London is an amazing city. Of course, you could pick holes in it. You could. I always think of London as being a woman that's going out, right? And she's all done up, she's gorgeous, but she's forgotten to change her underwear. That's what I think. And I don't mind that.
Yeah, that's about right.
That's pretty apt, actually.
Tiny bit grubby, just a wee bit grubby, but actually really good fun, you know? A naughty, naughty, naughty city. And I've had some amazing times here, and I absolutely love it. And you know, the London, England's been very, very good to me. And yes, it's a great place to live. It's a smashing place to live. Of course, it's downsides like everybody else.
So who's your football team?
Dundee, isn't it?
Dundee United.
Dundee United, not Dundee.
Sorry,
no,
Dundee United.
There's Dundee.
Oh, have I gone
United
again?
And the stadiums are literally across the road from one another. So when you play, when we used to play home games, because we're in different leagues now, but we used to just walk across the road. It's just incredible, absolutely incredible. So yeah, we're Dundee United. We're the Tangerine ones. We're the ones in Tangerine Park. We've got that. So I've supported them since, my husband, it was my first date. My husband asked me out to go and see Dundee United against Hearts with him.
Hearts were my Scottish team.
Are they?
Yeah, well, I don't know why, but I think it was because I really liked their strip. I think someone bought me a strip when I was a kid, and I remember like, oh, yeah, I'm going to support Hearts.
Yeah, well, he took me to see them, and that was when we had an amazing team. We used to beat Barcelona. We beat Barcelona 4 times.
Yeah.
Amazing. We had a great run in Europe. Now, of course, there's no money in Scottish football. But the new firm of Dundee United and Aberdeen did to challenge them for a while. But I'll be glad when that's back. I've been watching a few games. It's okay. It's just a bit weird. You know, I mean, Scottish football's not bad. I've been watching a couple of English games. It's strange, isn't it, with the crowd?
Well, option do you take? I was wondering, what do you have the crowd noise on?
I do.
Yeah, me too.
I do, because it's another training match and you can actually hear them, which is sometimes that's okay. I don't mind it, but it's not got the atmosphere. But I think they're doing a tremendous job with trying to make it as, you know, as close to being there as you can. But again, that'll be when we can do that. That'll be
Jim and I are both Crystal Palace fans.
Susanna's a
Exactly. Yeah, I know. I've seen Susanna at games. Actually, we bumped into her in the boardroom one game against Everton. I haven't enjoyed since we've started again, because we've only won one game. We've lost six.
United like that, we can have a brilliant run, and then and it's the hope, isn't it? It's the hope that kills you.
Always.
You think, oh, this time it's going to be different.
and it never is.
Now Susanna has got. She is a walking saint. The patience of that woman is just amazing, remarkable. Yeah. She deals with you. She's just got it right. And the two of them work together so beautifully, and it works really well. But yeah, she's a real proper footy fan.
She is. Yeah, we had a little chat when I saw her. But yeah, I know she's a big Palace fan. It's nice. It's always nice to meet comrades, isn't it? And when you meet a fellow fan.
Sure. When you meet me, if we meet a fellow, we're called the Arabs.
Yeah.
Dundee United fans are called. It's where there's lots of theories for it. But if you meet a fellow Arab, it's like, yeah, it's amazing, especially when you're on holiday or something like that, or somebody will come up and say, oh, I support Dundee United as well. It's good.
Now, you've been at ITV for a long time, apart from one, I know you had one little blip where you were replaced at one point. Am I right in saying that?
No, it was when I was off on maternity, yeah. Well, not maternity, I'm freelance. So yeah. I went away to have Rosie, and then they basically phoned me and said, well, thanks a bunch, we've got someone else. So that's hard,
yeah.
But that's industry, that's what happens. And so that's why I never take it for granted. And I was very lucky because she was born in the June and I was going back in September because, you know, you don't get all the time off. Especially not back then. You wouldn't have got so much time off. So I was going back then, and then they basically told me not to bother. And then I just basically went around every single TV station, said I'm available. And then nothing was happening. But in the November, I got asked back onto GMTV to do a mother and baby slot because they've got sponsorship for this. And it was like two little bubbles a week. And I did that, and it went really well. And the ratings were really good. And they went, ooh. And then they decided to give me my own show. So she was born in the June. I had that kind of really rough patch. Mm. And then I was back in the January when she was about 6 months old. And I had my own show. And that's been ever since. That was 95 that I started doing my own show. Before that, I was working with Eamon. I was working with Mike Morris on TVAM. Yeah, yeah. And then I was, Mike Morris is lovely.
Yeah,
very underrated. And very, very sorely missed. Great presenter and a really good guy, so I got my own show, and that's been ever since. So it's been nearly 36 years all in, if you count the time that I was working with TVAM, nearly 36 years in breakfast telly. So many regime changes,
yes.
So many name changes,
but you've been there all the way through. Was it hard though taking that decision was made?
Oh my goodness, it's awful. It cuts you to your soul. And of course, you know, apart from anything else, you've got to pay the mortgage and you've got to be just moved south. And, you know, and we were, Steve was working, he's a cameraman, so he was working, but it was hard, you know, it was difficult. Especially when, you hadn't really done anything wrong.
Yeah.
It was just fancied a change. And I get that. And they're absolutely, you know, that happens in telly all the time. That's why I'm amazed that I'm still doing what I'm doing. But there is that thing about breakfast TV that people like to have that continuity and that familiarity. And especially at the moment, which is why I've been on, you know, 5 days a week since the start of it. Since I'll be back sort of about end February, really, when it all sort of started kicking off. And people have been really kind because people have said to me, it's been lovely. It's been really reassuring see you there at 9 o'clock. Like I say, I'm going to take a few weeks off now because I need to go and see my dad and things and sort all of that out and make sure that he's all right. But yeah, apart from that, it's hard, but somehow you've just got to, and actually you've just got to bounce back, and it makes you realise that you can't take anything for granted, especially, you know, especially when it comes to work. I mean, especially now, you look at the amount of people, sadly, who are, and unfortunately, and going to go through a tough time, and it's difficult, and it means that you've got to have other skills as well. I mean, I'm all for things like, I mean, I think it's great people going to university, that's fantastic. You know, I wish my dad could have gone, but obviously back then there was no way that you could have afforded to go when you, you know, a young kid for the Gorbals. But I just think, you know, oftentimes we really should be teaching our kids to be plumbers and joiners and electricians and tailors and all these amazing skills that we're going to lose. I think that's really important. So I think we need to have a wee rethink. As we go forward, as we lurch into the new normal, and then we've got, just when we sort of come blinking into the sunshine, then we've got, da-da, Brexit is waiting for us.
God, so I keep forgetting about that.
What do you do?
I know it's hard to forget, so but I do. And then does it rears its ugly head again.
I know, and it's just today, somebody was saying to me, because if we were going to go away, and I don't think we will be, but if we were going to go away, we'd probably drive through the tunnel and maybe go somewhere like France or northern Spain. I love Galicia, is beautiful, though I think at the moment it's in lockdown. But if things change, that's what we might do. And that's easy enough because, you know, our wee dog Angus, it's easy enough to do that. But in the future, after Brexit, he's going to have to get a rabies injection, and there's like 4 months' notice and so many forms to fill in that most people probably wouldn't do it. I don't think we know what we're in for, unfortunately.
And it's those kind of practical things, isn't it? It's those practical things that people just don't realise.
So it's going to be quite hard. And things like insurance.
Yeah.
When you go up, make sure, you know, because a lot of people obviously thought, oh, if you go to Spain, you go to France, it's okay, we're in the EU. You know, if you get sick, it's fine. We've got this reciprocal thing. But that probably will not be happening. So you have to make sure that you're insured. Or if you get sick and you're abroad in Europe, you're going to get a big fat bill. So it's things like that that aren't, it's not all been ironed out yet. And of course, it hasn't been ironed out yet because the government are dealing with this terrible thing. So, you know, what's going to happen to us, we don't know. It's all you have to, but you have to keep your chin up, for God's sake.
It's so hard though, isn't it?
You do.
And you just go on Twitter to cheer yourself up.
You know what? As a nation as well, I think that we have been fantastic the way that we've responded to this. Of course, there are pockets of idiocy and people being daft and people being stupid and selfish and all the rest of it. But most people have been brilliant. They really have. They've really stuck to the rules. They've thought about everybody else as well as themselves. And that's really
cool. Lorraine, sorry for dropping out of the call when you said you were a Dundee United fan. I swear I'm not a Dundee fan. I wasn't just really offended in that moment. I apologise. It's my internet. Maybe my internet's a Dundee fan, actually. Maybe that's what...
Maybe. It does listen to me, of course.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask you, though, about blank moments. So this podcast is about sort of blank moments. But I'm wondering if sort of at the start of your career, being on live TV, whether there were any moments that particularly went wrong, or you had a blank moment, or your guest had a blank moment, or anything technical, anything like that.
Honestly, things happen every day, but hopefully you don't know, you know, because we've got an order, you know, we've got an order of what we're going to do things. Like we're going to do Ross from LA at the top of the show, but for some reason or other, the link is down, or he's late, or he's delayed getting to the studio, or whatever. We just have to. So that happens all the time that we're changing things. There's one time though that it was stupid. I was coming downstairs. Why I was coming downstairs? I mean, it's ridiculous. But I was coming downstairs. I had on high heels, and obviously they're talking to you all the time in your ear, giving you timings and whatnot. And I fell. I just fell, like, literally. You know, it was a cracker. I mean, it was like something out of a gymnastics competition. And I fell on my knees. And you know when you're a kid and you skin your knees, and my tights were all ripped, my knees were all horrible. But we were on live telly. I couldn't stop. I had to keep going. I just had to keep going. And it was, and actually when I watched it back, it was hilarious. I mean, it was really funny. It was one of those, it'll be all right in the night moments. But that's when you just have to, like, you just have to sort of get yourself together and keep going. And luckily, I was talking, do you remember Jane Asher?
Yeah,
lovely,
yeah.
Lovely woman, Jane. Obviously went out with Paul McCartney. Everybody knows about that. That was a long time ago, but she sort of reinvented herself as a cake maker and all the rest of it. And she was so kind. She sort of came over and helped me, and we sat down. And the great thing about my show is, though, of course, I mean, if it was old-fashioned BBC, not now, because BBC's got a bit different, they would have tried to ignore that. But when things happen in our show, we just always acknowledge it. We always acknowledge the fact that something's happened. And I always remember Sue Lawley was reading the news one time, and some delightful lesbians were coming down the studio. Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Now we would just go, oh, look, there's lovely lesbian ladies coming down.
She just cracked on.
Oh, hello, and then we probably talk. But she just, I mean, but that's the way, that was fine, because that's the way it was. Our show's totally different. But we would have thought, we would have probably gone, hi, now what's all this about? What's going on? Very nice to see you, and how are you? And that would have been fine. But yeah, things are, we've never had anything so bad. We did have the fire alarm went out once, and we had to abandon the studio. That's happened. That's happened quite a few times. One time when I was talking to a reporter who was in Cannes for the film festival, we had naked people behind, and they were running around, but there wasn't really that much to see. It wasn't even worth bothering about. It certainly wasn't worth posting. But yeah, things happen all the time. That's what I love about live telly, because you just never know what's going to happen. You just never know. Anything can happen, you know, anything at all. And unfortunately, usually when it's breaking news, it's not usually something horrendous. But yeah, anything can happen. And I quite like that. I like keeping it sort of loose and just keeping it more like a conversation. And, you know, people should feel comfortable when they come onto my show. They should. I mean, obviously, if they're a politician and we have politicians on, then of course they get a grilling if they need it. But they should feel comfy, because it's like they're coming into my house.
I think that's like a good metaphor for life. Like, you know, bad things happen sometimes, and dust yourself down and sort of crack on. Is the video of you falling down the stairs on YouTube or anything like that? that?
Oh God, yes, of course it is. Okay. Absolutely. Of course it's there. And the time I showed my pants when I did a high kick when I was with the Spice Girls, and on and on and on and on it goes. You know, there's so many things that happen. But like I say, you probably don't know most of them, because, you know, hopefully I can just, if you ever see me sort of going through the front pages of the newspapers and then talking a lot about Coronation Street, you know that everything's gone, that there's nobody to talk to, all the links are down, and it's just like abandoned ship. And I'm just for 9 minutes. I remember doing, actually, that was another one we did with the stars of Taggart. Remember Taggart?
Yes.
And we used to have people on to sort of reviewing things, and we had them on reviewing the latest, because they were dead interested in music. We had them on reviewing the latest singles were out that week, and the machine just broke. So we had to kind of, this mad situation where they were kind of like singing the songs and then we were talking about it. Honestly, you just get on with it. You just have to, yeah. So people have been really, that's one thing about this whole situation, people have been so creative.
Yeah.
They've been really creative with finding new ways to make telly. People have been filming things on their iPhones, drive-in concerts, brilliant. You know, people doing stuff online, you know, because obviously theatre's in a bad way, because we probably won't be able to go for quite some time now. And I think some of them will go to the wall, which is really sad. But yeah, finding different ways to make music videos and different ways to produce music. And it has actually been astonishing as to what people can do, you know, how creative they can be. It's good.
Yeah, it really has, actually. I was going to say, you alluded to it earlier, you've been working in that industry for like 36 years, and the landscape has changed many, many times, I'm sure.
Oh, dramatic.
Yeah, and I know you said as well that you've always kind of rolled with it, but do you think this period as well is going to change the landscape again permanently?
Oh, I think so. I do think it. I think it will. I mean, things like, you know, just from our point of view, things like, you know, when big stars would have premieres and or they would come over, you know, they would be flown over here and they'd take a whole floor of a posh hotel and we do all these interviews. I mean, now that we can do them online, you know, I mean, I've done loads of them from my house. It's just crazy. I don't know if they'll want to do that. And I think things will change from a business point of view, because if you're a business person and you've been getting on all right, I know there are some deals where you've got to be in the room where it happens, according to Hampton, but you've got to be there. But not a lot of those. And I think that'll stop. I think a lot of that will stop, and a lot of the ways that we do business will change quite dramatically. I think a lot of it will inevitably be like the way we're talking now. It will have to be, and the way that we are entertained, and, you know, like, I mean, I would think twice about going to a restaurant. I probably will quite soon. I've not been yet, but that will be a different experience, and I don't know if we'll ever get that sort of, you know, that lovely sort of going down the pub and sitting there and the buzz that's going on, and it's interesting, and it's just, yeah, it's just that whole sort of social side of it. Or you're out for a meal with pals and it's just a great, and everybody's laughing and it's just a lovely social environment. And that'll take a wee while to come back. I think that'll take a while to come back for sure. But I think it will, you know. I think it will. Mm. I think we always do. I mean, we've been through, you know, look at the Spanish flu. Yeah. That was horrific. And that really was absolutely horrific. I'm just, you know, fingers crossed we don't get a second wave. And if we do, that we're better prepared.
Yeah.
And we handle it a lot better than we have been, you know, because we have to have learned an awful lot of lessons from this on every single level, on every single level. I just worry about little kids, because when you go for a walk now, I don't know, I'm sure you're the same. I take my wee dog out for a walk. You see a wee kid on a bike, maybe, or you see a wee kid, maybe 3, 4, 5, and they sort of look at you and then back off. And you can see that they're a wee bit scared of people, and I just wonder about the long term psychological effect on a little one that will be. You know, I really hope it's not. I really hope that, you know, this is a wee blip. But I hate to see that, you know, because kids are normally, you know, they're so welcoming. They just want to cuddle everything, and they just want to, you know, just, they've got no filter at all. And for them to actually have to, you know, I feel so sorry for parents that have had to sit down with their little ones and have that really hard conversation. You know, I'm sorry you can't go and see your granny. Yeah, I'm sorry if somebody, don't go near them, stay away. You know, it's all of that. That's really hard. And you do wonder what sort of effect that will have long term. Hopefully not.
Yeah, hopefully. We've got a 9-month old, and so she's too young to understand what's going on, which I think is a blessing for us. But
You'll have to tell her.
She lived through this. She didn't know she lived through it. But she didn't see my parents, so her grandparents, for 4 months. So that was obviously hard for them, you know.
God, your parents must have been. That would be terrible. I feel so sorry for people that have got newborns, because you do want everybody to come around and see and share and, you know, celebrate this new life. You know, it's just such a brilliant thing, especially just now. You know, we all need things to celebrate. And that's really hard too. It's going to be really tough for people. I think there is going to be a big, big mental health problem. And I just hope that we are not only equipped to deal with it, you know, we've got practical help there, but also more understanding. But I think we are. I think I've certainly found that, you know, in all the time, that's one of the big changes that I've found from when I started. I mean, when I started all those years ago, we didn't mention the C word. Cancer wasn't mentioned. Things like menopause weren't mentioned. Things, you know, things were taboo. And mental health. Taboo. It really was. It was just something that you never would talk about, and it was like, soldier on, pull yourself together, all these stupid things that are the most ridiculous thing you'd ever say to somebody suffering. And that has changed, and that needs to. That really needed to change quite dramatically. But as well as talking and being open, which is wonderful, well, once we've done that, we need to actually help people practically, you know, so we do need practical help, and we do need a lot more counsellors and a lot more people that are experts to help out, because, you know, there's no point in identifying a problem if you don't have a solution to it, or at least try to have a solution to it. So that's going to be a big challenge, I think, for any government year.
Lorraine, it's been incredible talking to you, and what's been nice is that when we have the guests on this podcast, you feel like you know them sometimes. You know, I've seen you on TV for a long time, and I always think, like, I hoped Lorraine was going to be a friendly, positive person off screen. And you are. And I'm just like, it's been so lovely talking to you. But is that the sort of person you are? Have you always been a sort of friendly, gregarious, outgoing person? Or is it something you work on?
No, I think most people would probably say that I'm very nosy, and that going into journalism was probably absolutely the right career for me. My husband is the life and soul of the party. Like, if we go out, he is the person that kind of, you know, he's brilliant, and everybody wants to be in his company, and he just does light up the room. He's wonderful. But I've got that thing of kind of not really wanting, like, you know, obviously if somebody asks me, you know, who are you talking to? But you don't want to be that person that goes into and say, oh, by the way, I was talking to Jamie Helen just the other day. You know, clang, 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 as you're dropping all the names, everybody's sweeping them up. You know, you don't. So I tend to be a little bit quieter maybe than perhaps I should. I don't know. But yeah, I'm lucky that the job allows me to just be myself, which is great. You know, that you can do that, because you're not kind of the news reading persona. You know, you have to be that. And that's the joy of what we do. And that's the joy of the programme, that we can do that. We can express opinions. Sometimes, in the case of Piers Morgan, a lot of opinions. You know, we do these wee handovers in the morning, and I never have a clue what he's going to say. And sometimes I forget I'm on the telly. And you just, you know, he's just funny. He's just very, very funny.
I think that makes a good TV when, because I heard you I was listening to you on another podcast. It was Rob Beckett and Josh Widdicombe's Parenting in Lockdown. Such a good podcast. But you said the same thing. Sometimes I forget I'm on the TV. And I was thinking, that is what makes good TV. If the presenter almost forgets they're on, and you forget they're on TV, and it becomes like a sort of conversation, and you take away the cameras, that's good TV.
Yeah, I think so. I think you've got to be careful. You know, you don't want to say anything that's going to get you into terrible trouble. But yeah, it's important to be, and like I say, it's not about me. It's about whoever I'm talking to. I'm just the person that's asking the questions, and I don't mind asking daft questions. You see, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me that I know the answer to it, because somebody else might not. And it's finding things out and making people feel, making people feel relaxed, like you two have done with me.
Oh, well, I'm glad that's the case.
No, it is, but it's just been a chat, isn't it? It's just been a wee blather. We could well be sitting on a bus or a train.
Just not in London.
Just having a meet, catch up.
Not in London.
Yeah. Not right now.
Well, that's true. I mean, we've always said, yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're just. I feel like, I mean, Jim and I have always said this, that we're just facilitators, really, facilitators for a conversation. Yeah. And that's, and I guess that's the same for you when you have guests. Do you still
definitely get?
But do you still get? Is it still a buzz for you when you talk to someone really famous? Is it still like, oh?
Oh gosh, I was beside myself when I talked to, I mean, it's just Buzz Aldrin, the second man in the moon, right? It was not a good interview, because I was just sitting there basically going like that and fan. But it was, I mean, I just kept looking at it and thinking, you've been on the moon. This is like the most, like, extra, you know, I just couldn't get my head around it. It was just absolutely unbelievable. So yeah, I do. And Oprah Winfrey, I was a little bit nervous talking to her, but she is body.
Of course.
And she was so, and it's like, you know, that you love somebody so much and you really, really want them to be really gorgeous and nice. And she was everything that you would expect, and the rest, just fantastic, absolutely fantastic. It's a shame when you get somebody that's not great, or that's grumpy, or that can't be bothered. You know, that can't. Yeah, that's a wee shame. But I always think to myself, maybe, you know, they might have just been a bad day, or they're just, I don't know, whatever. You just have to sort of, it's fine. But I always think it's a shame when people don't enjoy the process, because you sort of think, well, don't do it then.
Yeah.
You don't want to be interviewed. Don't do your contract, and I know you have to do, you know, all this PR movie or whatever. But if you really don't want to do it, get them to write that out of your contract and get less money, and then you don't have to do it.
Yeah.
And then everybody else can do it, and then everybody else will have a nice time. You know, so, you know, memo to Kevin Spacey, if you don't want to do it, don't do it.
I was wondering if you're going to name me, like, reveal who that was.
Oh, my God. Oh, geez, he was awful. Oh, it was such a shame, because it was for House, it was before all the hoo-ha, and it was House of Cards, which
it's a great show.
Adored that show.
Yeah, it's a great show.
It's kind of lost at the end, but, you know, for the first sort of four seasons, it was remarkable, and he just wasn't very nice, and you sort of thought, well, you just can't be bothered being here, and that's fine, I don't expect you to, you know, but don't be sort of like so offhand with all the people around about you, because they're only trying to do their job and make you look good, you know. I just don't get it.
I think, like you say, if you don't want to do it, then I mean, like you say, I know they've got contracts, and it's all about promoting.
I mean, then you get someone like Hugh Jackman, who's just like a joy, and you come on, you get on the lift, and you go in, and everybody's got a smile on their face, and everybody's happy, and he's like a complete delight. And I actually said to him, I said, "You have made this so easy for all of us." And he said, "For goodness sake, it's my job. It's my job to do that. Of course I'm going to." And he said, "My mum brought me up very well." But he had the absolute right attitude. This is my job. I'm a professional. I'm going to have to do this. So let's all have a laugh. Let's all enjoy ourselves. Let's just have fun doing this and talking about this movie that I really had a great time making. You know, and you think,
and a lot of, you know, and like someone like that is an actor. So, you know, if you're not having a good time, you can at least act like you are.
Well, that's what Tom Hanks does. Tom Hanks acts as somebody that's getting interviewed, having a nice time. And then he has a nice time. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I like Tom.
Oh, he's gorgeous. He's the nicest man in the world. Have you seen that new movie? The one about World War II? Greyhound, it's called.
No, I haven't
seen
that
good.
Yet, no.
It's very good. It's quite short, and it's good. It's not... it's a wee bit more like a documentary.
Oh, okay.
But it's... It shows the, you know, all these aspects that we don't really know anything about, like these convoys that came from America to the UK to bring us food and supplies and all of that, and how brave they were, and they used to get attacked by the U-boats, and that's what the movie's about. Tom is a captain, obviously. It's really good.
He's always really good, isn't he? I mean, he's always good value.
James Stewart, he's our James Stewart, just he's our everyman.
Everyman, yeah, absolutely.
You just know that it's all going to be okay.
Well, I feel a bit like this about this pod, actually. I think talking to you, Lorraine, I feel like everything is going to be okay.
It is going to be okay. It's all going to be fine. It might be a little bit rocky, but it's all going to be fine, because we are okay as lot, and we'll be all right. We will. There's more good people than horrible people in this country. We tend to focus on the bad bits, but there's some good people, and they will triumph. That's what I think.
Well, we can't. I mean, that seems like a really nice, beautiful way to end the end the podcast.
Perfect. And I totally agree. There's more good people out there, I think.
There is. They just don't get the. They just don't make the headlines. Of course they don't. You know, you're not going to see a headline in front of the Daily Mail. Nice person does a nice thing. It's never going to happen.
I'd buy that if it was, though.
I'd buy that.
Well, Lorraine, thank you so much, Lorraine Kelly. It's been honestly a joy to spend an hour in your company. It really has. And thank you so much for giving us your time. We appreciate it.
Delighted.
Thank you.
Really good. Thanks,
great to
guys.
Meet you.
Thanks
so much.
No worries. Thank you so much. Have a lovely rest of the week.
Thank you. And keep posting your lovely, all your things on Twitter are so good, Giles. You've always got really uplifting stuff, and it's not cheesy uplifting, it's proper.
Oh, well,
you know how you sometimes get all these wee quotes from mad American people usually, and you think, oh, shut up. Yours are proper. Yours are proper.
Well, thank you.
They mean something.
Thank you, I will. And yeah, love to your dad. I hope he's on the mend.
Well, you know, he's 80, God bless him, and he's doing okay. It's just I need to go see him. I just need to see him. No, it's not the same as all of this. It'll be fine. But thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
And have a good day.
And you. Well, there you go. Lorraine Kelly on the Blank Podcast. Lorraine Kelly, a broadcasting legend.
Absolutely, yes. And just, I hope that it comes across as much, I'm sure it will, on the episode. Just what great company she was. So, yeah. Easy to talk to, you know, friendly. But then, it's not a surprise, is it? I mean, it's Lorraine Kelly. Of course she's going to be easy to talk to and she's going to be friendly and bubbly. But wonderful company.
No, but she, I mean, she alluded to at the end that we're not, you know, not everybody's like that. And she's had interviews with people that haven't been like that. And, you know, I mean, yeah, so, you know, it's not always easy to be on all the time. But I think, you know, she is someone who is genuinely a lovely person and, you know, just exudes positivity.
But I think you wouldn't have the career she's had and the longevity without being like that and without being... easy to talk to and herself. That's what I got from this, that she is herself and always has been, and that's why she's been so successful. And she was talking about, you know, on her show they're able to reference when things go wrong and they're able to say their opinion, and that's what makes her so successful, because she's not tried to be anything she's not. And I think that's actually a really good takeaway for any of us listening, that actually if you can be yourself, and I think you will be more successful and I think happier.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, no, it was a real pleasure to talk to her and a real privilege.
It was indeed. Now, it's also, Giles, a privilege and a pleasure to receive some of the correspondence that we get from our listeners. And this is the part where we read out some tweets. I've got two tweets here from someone that I know.
You can read them both out.
Well, they're both from the same person.
Is it Ian Waggers?
Waggers 66, Ian Waghorn, who I feel like we may have possibly read out a tweet from him before. He's a Palace fan, so obviously that elevates him in our opinion.
Yeah, yeah, he gets to the front of the queue, basically.
And he's very supportive of Blank, which we really appreciate. And obviously, some people might not know that I do a Palace podcast and have done for a while. And there seems to be a bit of a crossover from some of our listeners that have sort of come to Blank. And we really appreciate those people that have sort of...
Yeah, well, and if you are a Palace fan listening and you don't subscribe to FYP,
well, then where have you been?
You should.
It's been 10 years. Yeah. No, if you would like some Crystal Palace chat, then please do subscribe to the FYP podcast. But I'm going to read Ian's tweet. So he's put, just catching up with episodes and suddenly realised I got a mention. So there we go. We did read out one of his tweets. Haven't been so excited since FYP read out my cheese question years ago. And there you go. If you want a little snapshot of what we talk about on the FYP podcast, it is mostly food related. Thank you, Jim and Giles. I still haven't worked out how to leave an iTunes review. And I think you replied to him then with some tips. And of course, we do appreciate anyone that leaves a review. And Ian goes on to say, the John Sweeney episode is brilliant. Oh, it was. That was a good episode. He's an amazing chap. Blake Harrison was good too. The weird thing is you get such natural conversation out of your guests. I find myself joining in out loud now and again. Well, that's lovely to hear. That we must be doing something right.
I love it if I overheard someone in a supermarket chatting along to one of our podcasts. That would be a brilliant thing.
Well, I don't know about you. I listen to pods mostly when I'm running. And it's, I normally sort of comedy podcasts listen to. So quite often I'll be running down the road laughing my head off. And I actually recently I passed someone, I sort of waved at them, but I was like laughing at the same time. I wonder if they thought, what is wrong with this man running down the street laughing his head off? But that's just...
Well, they might have thought that you were laughing at
yeah,
them.
Oh, I hope they didn't think that. But yeah, it's...
Don't laugh and run is what I... And
it's
wave.
A dangerous combo.
Those three things in
combination
are not good.
I didn't think I was a multitasker,
good.
But there you go. Maybe it turns out I've got more skills than I realised. But yeah, so thank you, Ian, for your tweet. I mean, what a top man.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
And if you'd like to tweet us as well and let us know any of your favourite episodes or guests, you can. Our Twitter account is
at BlankPod.
And also we're on Facebook and Instagram as well. And our handle there is @BlankPod. And I still haven't checked those messages, but apparently we do get some. And
We do. We get lots on Instagram.
I need to check them. And you can email us as well if you'd fancy a longer chat over email. Our email address is
blankpodcast2018@gmail.com.
Wonderful stuff. And that's it for this week, Charles.
I know, another week done. Another episode of the Blank Podcast.
We are creeping towards 100.
We are. Which is a big number.
It is a big number.
And who'd have thought at the beginning of this journey we'd have got to 100 podcasts?
I know, quite quickly as well. So
we've talked to 100 famous people.
That's crazy.
Which is quite mind-blowing in a way, for you, little old you and little old me.
Yeah, I think...
Who are unbeknownst to most of the general public.
And will remain that way, probably. But I think if you'd have told us two years ago, we probably just met 2 years ago, and we were probably sort of talking about plans and stuff. It was summer 2018, wasn't it, that we sort of...
It was. Yeah, it was around this time we probably started. The germs of an idea were forming.
We infected each other with the idea of a podcast. No, it's not. And to think 2 years later that we've chatted to some amazing people.
We've been very lucky.
And next week we'll have another amazing person again on the Blank Podcast. So it just leaves us to say, have a great week. Stay safe. Charles, have a good one with all your random projects that you're doing.
And you, Jim, with all your random projects.
And we'll see you again soon on the Blank Podcast.
Media Podcast.